The bed bugs are us.
House Committee on Energy and Environment will come to order. Colleagues, we have a relatively brief agenda today. We're going to go ahead and start with opening a work session on House Bill 4107. Rick?
Thank you, Chair. We did hear this on last meeting, and this does extend the alternate fuel revolving fund. There is the Dash 1 amendment that was discussed in the last meeting. There's a fiscal impact statement on that and a no revenue impact.
Great.
Colleagues, what's your pleasure?
Do it.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wider.
Actually having someone interning for me today, Cole Kleinstubber from Yamhill Carlton High School. Maybe he would want to come up and talk about 4107 and tell us his thoughts.
We appreciate the hazing.
Okay.
We appreciate the sentiment. Maybe we'll get it next time.
We extend our condolences too.
You have the sympathy of the committee. Vice Chair Johnson.
Chair Bailey, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4107, dated 2/5 of 2014.
Vice Chair Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4107, dated 2/5/2014. Is there any discussion of the amendment? Any objection to the Vice Chair Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I think as we discussed the other day, I think the initial plan for this was to try to build capacity into the system so that there could be enough demand to be able to get some of these fuels into certain areas, and I think we approved that, and so it's still a new program, but my only concern would be that this would constrict the availability for public agencies to be able to have access, so I'm trusting that this will not do that, but I still appreciate the intent of the bill. So
appreciate that clarification. Mm-hmm. Any more discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, amendment carries. Vice Chair Johnson.
Chair Bailey, I move House Bill 4107 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Johnson moves House Bill 4107 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to echo Vice Chair Johnson's thoughts, the original concept years ago as we started this idea was to get more alternative fuel out there, have it more available so folks would have choices and lower prices because of the competition between the alternative fuels. And this was one of the efforts that has resulted from that concept, and I think it's still something we need to work on. I'm happy to see the expansion to the private sector, so I'll be supporting the bill.
Seeing no further discussion, clerk, please call the roll.
Aye.
Motion carries. It's on its way to the floor. Representative Benz, would you care to carry?
Happy to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
I will.
We will also most likely check in with the Speaker and see if it is her preference to carry the bill, given that it's hers, but I imagine she may have other responsibilities. So for now, you're on the hook. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4107 and open a public hearing on House Bill 4145. Rick?
Thank you, Chair. You do have a staff agent summary in there. What this bill does is it does require the examination of pesticide operator license classification to engage in business of pesticide application for control of pests to reach to public health, including questions testing applicants' knowledge regarding proper practice for treating bed bugs. Amongst other things, it does require a pesticide operator to currently engage in business of pesticide application for control of pests to public health, deleterious to public health, to pass within 1 year an examination, testing the operator's knowledge, proper practice for treatment of bed bugs. And then provides for license classification suspension if pit side operator fails to a timely pass examination. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Colleagues, this bill, you'll note, is up for a public hearing and not a work session, and came about after some discussion about some needs from the counties on better application of pesticides for controlling bed bugs. But in discussions with the county, it seems as they have some additional information. So, or excuse me, with the Department of Agriculture, they have some additional information. So I'd like to call up Katie Koba and Dale Mitchell, please, from the Department of Agriculture.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Agriculture. You don't think bed bugs are exciting, Representative Johnson?
I was commenting. I think this issue might be better handled in our higher ed committee. We talk about dormitories and students and so forth, but I'll let you proceed.
So we became aware of Representative Bailey's bill once it was introduced, and took the opportunity to come in and sit down and visit with him about what really prompted his introducing the bill and what the concerns were, and whether our existing pesticide program requirements could be used to address those concerns. And I think in the course of that discussion, we came to the position where we felt our existing program could address the concerns that had been raised by the county, and we walked through what we do and how we kind of monitor where those interesting things could be popping up, whether it's bed bugs, whether it's control of mosquitoes when West Nile virus really became an issue in the state, pollinators clearly, and Representative Ridden's worked a lot with us on this and could probably give my testimony for me, but would be another area of interest right now, and how we work within the framework of our pesticides program to deal with these kinds of issues. So I'm going to give a very kind of high-level brief overview of how our program works and how we deal with issues when they're brought to our attention. With me is Dale Mitchell, who is our program manager in our pesticides program and could answer any question you could ever imagine you might have about our licensing, our examination processes, where we get our exam questions, how we do our ongoing training, and those kinds of things. So I'll start off, and then the questions that you have that I can't answer, I'm going to turn to Dale and have him do that. The Department of Agriculture in the state of Oregon is responsible for licensing pesticide applicators, and we have a number of different categories. I think broadly you can think of public categories, which is where we would license employees from public entities like a county health department, like a university system. And then we have commercial applicators, and these are entities that are called on for hire and to go in and do pesticide applications. So with this situation with bed bugs, it could have been a public employee that made those applications, or it could have been a commercial applicator who was hired by an entity to come in and make an application. As I understand it, and what we found out after having more communication with Multnomah County, they had received some concerns from some residents where applications had been made for treatment of bed bugs in a public housing unit, as I understand it. And the concerns were more around people that maybe had chemical sensitivity to pesticides, concerns about the odor, wanting to make sure the pesticides were safe, and just, you know, worried about that happening in the places that they live. And I can understand if you've got people living in public housing and someone is coming in and making applications wanting to make sure that those folks are indeed safe. So in the conversations with Representative Bailey, we kind of outlined the fact that these are people that we currently license. And when we become aware of areas of concerns, and with bed bugs, this really came to our attention probably 6, 8, 10 years ago, and we began tracking specifically complaints or concerns around bed bugs, and we have a little bit of information, but not a whole lot of complaints and concerns with bed bugs. But as we do that, we kind of put that on our radar screen, and if it develops to a level of where we think we need to enhance our existing exam questions, or whether we need to enhance our training that we give ongoing to applicators, then that is something that we can do. So with bed bugs, having received particularly the concern from Representative Bailey, what we intend to do with our, within our existing framework is probably add some additional questions for our licensing examinations around bed bugs. And then more importantly, with our ongoing training, add some specific modules related to bed bugs and really do some education and outreach, particularly with those entities that we know do applications to treat bed bugs, make sure they're up to speed on what's going on, making sure they're sensitive to residents and residents' concerns. So kind of in a nutshell, what I'm trying to say is we feel like with our within our existing system, we have the capability to address these concerns, and that probably additional legislation is not necessary, but certainly wanted to come and kind of explain that to you and see if you had any questions for us.
Thank you.
And I think Dale's just available to answer specific questions unless I really mess something up in my overview.
Great. Thank you. Is that the case?
That is the case.
Additional testimony. Great. Okay. It sounds like what I hear you saying is that there is an opportunity now to modify existing practices such that we make sure that we have applicators that are trained in best practices in applying pesticides, such that the problem is taken care of, especially when we have a public health issue at risk with bed bugs, while at the same time balancing that against the needs of concerns of residents in having pesticides applied in living spaces and environments, especially in multifamily areas. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's absolutely correct. And we have ongoing communication with counties, public entities anyway, about our programs. We had the opportunity, after this issue came to our attention, to have conversations with Multnomah County. I think, I'm not going to speak for them, but our understanding is they feel very comfortable about our ability to work with them to make sure applications are done correctly and in a way that's sensitive to residents' needs or concerns. So I think it's fair to say that the county also is comfortable with moving forward in partnership with us to address these issues.
And that's my understanding as well. Questions for this panel?
I just wanted to comment. I've been so impressed with Department of Ag and working on another pesticide issue, but I did have one small question. Can you tell me the class of pesticides that are used to combat bed bugs?
Yeah. Chair Bailey, committee, for the record, Dale Mitchell, Pesticide Program Manager, Oregon Department of Agriculture. Bed bugs, there may be many different active ingredients that may be used to control bed bugs. U.S. EPA actually has a website where you can go on and obtain a list of specific products that are efficacious for bed bug control. It ranges in regards to the toxicity. Some of those products are what we refer to as 25B products, which do not require federal registration. They fall under our definition of a pesticide product. But 25B are products that you may be familiar with: cedar oil, citronella candles. Mm-hmm. Citronella is another 25B product. So those products are very low toxicity. On the other end, there is more conventional chemistry, which may be pyrethrins, pyrethroids, some of the other more common active ingredients to affect or to address the bed bug population. So it's a wide variety. Most of the time, we are not dealing with restricted use materials, which is a small category of your highly toxic products. They're mainly general use active ingredients. So it is a wide spectrum.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Whitson.
I was wondering how long after you treat something for bed bugs, I assume they're, like in public housing, empty apartments, or are there people in them, or how does that work, and how long do they have to be gone, or does it depend what you're treating it with?
Yeah, Representative Witt, that's a good question. The product labels have very specific instructions in regards to use of materials and the hazards. On the label, it will prescribe if individuals are required to not be in the area of treatment at the time. If that is a label statement on the product, having residents there during the application could be viewed as a violation of that label and an issue that or matter that we would be addressing through our regulatory program. So it depends on the label language. The general sense is at, you know, other individuals should not be in the area until the material has dried. That's the general precaution.
Anybody else itching to get a question in? It had to happen.
That was bad.
I'm wondering if do any of the non, I think you said non-listed, are that the category in terms of
the really more toxic from, you had a word for that.
General use.
Okay.
Versus restricted.
Versus restricted.
Are there
use.
Any of those that would have a residual longer than others, you know, that you can apply it and it would, even though it's not really toxic, for the residents who may be in there, but have a longer shelf life or a longer residual value than others?
Representative Johnson, I mean, each of the active ingredients may have a different degree of residual activity. So it would depend on the chemistry of the material. When the product goes through US EPA registration, you know, they look at that and take that into consideration, because certainly you want to have a level of protection that after the application, even though the material may be dried, that people coming into contact with that would not be suffering any adverse impacts. So it really depends on the active ingredient that is involved.
What is your efficacy for treating something for bed bugs the first time? Or, I mean, how do you know how infested it is? I mean, not really a nice subject, I guess, but I'm just trying to figure out, you know, do you get them all? I've read that sometimes they get in the corners of places and they hide, and so then they come back out after you treat it. And I was just wondering how effective is treating for bed bugs in what sorts of situations?
Yeah, Representative Wissett, I mean, bed bugs certainly can be challenging, and you're absolutely right. We're talking a very small insect pest which can get into some of the creases or folds in, let's say, a mattress, you know, area. So treatment practices usually require a lot of sanitation in advance and removal of clutter. And at times, depending on the infestation, it can be quite challenging, not impossible, but it does take a very methodical approach depending on how bad the infestation is. There is an extensive amount of information on the website with US EPA, and I think we are blessed to have a federal grant program at Oregon State University, NPIC, the National Pesticide Information Center, and they have extensive information in regards to specific treatment of bed bugs, how either homeowners or individuals can go about addressing the problem or issue.
Thank you. I guess I would simply ask, would you be willing to come back during the interim and give us an update on your rules and your procedures and how they're how effective they've been in addressing this problem?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. You know, as we indicated, we have been tracking kind of a complaint log or concerns. Would you quit laughing?
I'm smirking, not laughing.
There is a difference.
In terms of the contact that we receive, so we'll continue to kind of keep that, as well as incorporating questions into the examination and the training, and we're happy, more than happy at any time to come back and report back what we're hearing and what we're doing.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if you would be interested in taking some of my bills and agreeing to put them into effect. Just kidding.
I think that is a rhetorical question. Thank you for your time and for your attention to this. Call up Chris Winston, please.
Representative Bailey, members, thank you for your attention. I'm here on proxy for Larry Treeleaven. If you've been around for a while and talked anything
I'm sorry, if you could introduce yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Winson. I work for Univar Environmental Sciences. We are a wholesale distributor of chemicals, and the Environmental Sciences Division does mostly the sale of pesticides to pest control operators. In that case, I will start with my statement. So, as a member of the Multnomah County Bedbug Work Group for over the last 5 years, I'm keenly aware of how pests, in particular bedbugs, have affected the people of Oregon. And I understand the impact they have had on our most vulnerable citizens. I'm a licensed Oregon State Pesticide Consultant for over the last 11 years, and I work with most of the pest control operators throughout the state and help them in their efforts to eradicate this pest. I do understand the challenges and the successes they have had in dealing with this pest. I believe that bedbugs will be part of our culture going forward. We will not be able to completely eliminate them as we had in the past. And for this reason, training and education are crucial to the PCO industry. And this should be in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture and that pesticide division, making sure that licensing exams adequately test for knowledge and understanding not only of bedbugs, but their proper treatment. So I am certainly in favor of additional questions on the testing for our licenses. One concern we have as an industry and as part of the county work group, as part of the Oregon Pest Control Association, is the occasional unscrupulous business that will take advantage of people's fears and misunderstanding of bedbugs. These companies are atypical of the industry. They're not exclusive of pest control industry. We'll find them in every trade. And easy to agree that we would like to find these businesses and shut them down. Unfortunately, no amount of legislation or training or licensing or testing that we provide will be able to stop a few, those few who choose to work outside of the industry norm. I do believe any additional legislation or licensing will only create a burden for legitimate businesses in the great state of Oregon. To create separate licensing categories for bedbugs will create financial hardships on the small businesses that make up over 80% of our pest control industry. Most of these businesses are anywhere from 1 to 5 employees. For them to have to retake an exam or a test, not only for every business, but for all of their technicians, again, would be costly to them. And then those costs get passed on to the very people we're trying to protect. I do oppose any additional licensing categories specific to bedbugs. It's my experience that educating people on bedbugs is probably the most and best use of any government and private funds that we can have. This is really stemming from the work that we've done on this work group out of Multnomah County. The consumer that's aware has the power to make better choices. They can spot the frauds, and they can spot those who do not perform adequate bedbug treatments. They understand their rights, and they will hold businesses accountable for their actions or inactions. And there are multiple agencies dedicated to providing this information. So it is my opinion that education is where state government would have the biggest impact where bedbugs are concerned with the citizens. So additionally, I would like to state bedbugs are not a public health threat. They are not. They have not ever been shown to transmit any disease. They can be considered a public health concern. Because as you sit there and we talk about bed bugs, many people start to itch and scratch. So if you can imagine an actual infestation, what that can do to you either mentally or the physical stress of that, along with stigma. Bed bug treatments are very labor intensive and they can be very costly. This adds to the stress of that situation, especially to our more vulnerable citizens. A proper treatment consists of a thorough inspection, cleaning, mechanical measures, chemical measures, and then follow-up. Individuals who self-treat for bed bugs are far more likely to misuse pesticides than our professional applicators. We've seen terrible examples of this time and time again. And I can probably hold you all afternoon with examples of that, but just let me tell you that, well, I'll give you one. A woman was very concerned for her cat. She had bed bugs in her home. She bought 5 pounds of diatomaceous earth and applied all of that on her cat. So, again, she didn't understand the product. She didn't understand where to apply it. She certainly did not understand the health implications to herself and her poor cat. And then, of course, what that does then, anybody trying to follow up and help her with all that product put out there. Most people will do this in an effort to save money because it is expensive. They lack the knowledge and the training necessary. They're also not held to any scrutiny or standards. So, again, that's probably a bigger concern, and education will help those people. So, thank you for your attention. That is what I would like to say to this committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Questions for this witness? Representative Vega Peterson.
Thank you. So, thank you for being here today. I appreciate that your point about educating people on who are good actors in the business and who aren't. And it seems, from what I know about it, which isn't that much because it does creep me out a little bit, but that really prevention would be the easiest way of dealing with the bed bug issue because it is such a labor-intensive, financial process, and the efficiency of actually the treatment isn't always guaranteed. You might have to go back and do multiple things, as you said. So what's the best way to just prevent it? Are there practices that are easier to educate people on to just not have the issue in the first place?
Well, no, actually, to prevent bed bugs, you would not be able to do that. They're efficient hitchhikers. They've traveled all over the globe. And we figure that's one of the reasons why we're seeing the increase now is because they do have that ability to travel on your shoe, in your purse, on your backpack, on your luggage, at the movie theater, public transportation, taxis. Yes. So pretty much anywhere where you are in a public area, there is the remote chance that you could pick up a bed bug. So preventing that, it would not. There's really no prevention measures out there for that. Again, educating people what a bed bug looks like, what they do, if they get bites, what to do about it, and then once they suspect they may have bed bugs, how to spot a good pest control company. You know, what should they expect from that pest control company? Those are the things that would help them.
I think we feel much better about the bugs.
We will file that under. Careful what you ask, Representative. What's it?
I just have a question, sort of geologically speaking. How does diatomaceous earth work on bed bugs?
Diatomaceous earth does two things. First of all, if it contacts their exoskeleton, so on the outside of them, it actually dries them up. And so, but also the shape and structure of them, they're diatoms, and they're very crystalline in structure, and they cut them as well. Okay. So again, it's all about drying out that insect.
Okay. Thank you.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Interesting, thank you, Mr. Chair. Interesting distinction between, you know, as you say here, bed bugs are not a public health threat as they're not shown to transmit disease. We put them in a different category than, say, mosquitoes, right? Because mosquitoes can be a public health threat. Obviously, the
They have the ability to vector disease from one place to
more of a nuisance category. I don't know if you have a different categorization for those. Pardon me?
General.
General, okay.
General.
Interesting. I learned something. Thanks. Appreciate that.
There is one other paper in front of you for the record from Larry Treleaven, who is the Oregon Pest Control Association legislative chair. So basically, a lot of what I just said, he's said here very eloquently.
We'll make sure to read it.
Yeah, and I won't take the time to pretend I'm Larry. But anyway, much the same recommendation in that we do not need any additional legislation as an industry. We've really learned a lot over the last several years in combating this pest, and we have many people very, very efficient and good at eradicating this for people.
So. Well, we appreciate your engagement with the work group and with the department on finding solutions, improving best practices, and making sure that we're addressing this crisis that many people are experiencing and is an uncomfortable situation. So we look forward to more collaboration and to improving practices that are out there. Okay. Seeing nobody else that's signed up to testify, you think you're excused. And we will go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 4145.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if you would consider referring this issue to the Human Services Committee for the interim?
No.
I'll take that under advisement.
I was going to just wish you to sleep tight.
And colleagues, at this point, Rick, is it correct to say that we do not have any Senate bills?
Chair, yes. As of today, there has been no referrals to health, energy, and environment. Okay. There's a lot of bills coming out for second and third reading next couple days from the Senate.
Okay. So stay tuned. We will, however, have a series of informational meetings that I hope that you find useful and worth your time. So check your schedules and your agendas for that. But otherwise, committee is adjourned.
Debate whether you want to eat lunch or